Hello, it is Sunday, August 29th. I am Trent Rinesmith, and this is the wrap-up show for UFC Vegas 35, Chikadze Barboza fight card. Right into it. Of course, if you're familiar with how I do this, I will start off with things outside the fight that happened, or after the fight, or before the fight, but not directly the fights. So we're going to start off with things that UFC President Dana White said after the event. Of course, the event featured the bantamweight and middleweight finals of the most recent season of The Ultimate Fighter. I don't know what season that is because I don't follow The Ultimate Fighter. And I guess now it is on ESPN Plus. And here's what White said about the most recent season of Tough. It did really well for us. It killed it as far as viewership goes. ESPN is really happy. We're really happy. Yeah, I love the show. I've said it before and I'll say it again. The show will probably never go away while I'm here anyway. It works. We're doing one a year. Now that this one is over, we'll start figuring out what's next. We never really figure out the coaches until literally 2 weeks before the show is getting ready to get started. We'll see what the landscape looks like at the time. We're starting to do it again and with what the weight classes are, and we'll start figuring it out. My comment on this is ESPN might be happy. I don't know. The UFC is probably happy because they deliver content, which is all this is really, to ESPN at a minimal cost, because all the overhead is paid for on these shows, just because they have the house and everything, and it's just going through the motions at this time. Because they've done it so many times. It's rote, it's ritual. Everyone knows what they need to do. And so the amount of effort that's going to go into it from the UFC standpoint is minimal. And they know what they need to look for. They know how to edit. This is just basically, like I said, content. Now, ESPN, at this point with ESPN Plus, I cannot believe that they are looking for simple retention on the ESPN Plus subscribers. They're looking for growth. So for Dana White to say that this is a success, I would need to say, look at what numbers are you going to show us? Has the number of subscribers gone up because of The Ultimate Fighter, because of this season of The Ultimate Fighter? And I would doubt that very highly. I don't think that they're going to lose subscribers over something like Tough, but I also don't think they're going to gain subscribers unless the coaches are really name coaches and there's something else to suck the viewers in who aren't already subscribed to ESPN Plus. And Volkanovski and Ortega, they were not those two coaches. There was not enough beef there. There was not enough heat. And really, the franchise is just watered down, weak, and it's just there to provide cheap content to ESPN. Now, like I said, I doubt that they lost subscribers to ESPN Plus over The Ultimate Fighter, but I also doubt that they've gained subscribers because of The Ultimate Fighter. And the name of the game right now for ESPN Plus is not retention. It is growth. And I highly doubt that growth was what the UFC saw here. Kevin Lee lost to Daniel Rodriguez, and now Lee is 2-5 in his last seven. And here's what Dana White had to say about Kevin Lee. It's a good question about the future of Kevin Lee. Again, that's a thing we'll get together on Tuesday and talk about and figure out what's next for him, here or not here. Now, I don't mind this so much. Kevin Lee is a good fighter. He's not a great fighter. He's just kind of in the middle of lightweight and welterweight. 165-pound division would be perfect for Kevin Lee, but that's not a division that is offered, and so Kevin Lee is kind of in limbo, and he can't really find a spot. He can't really make anything happen, and that's got to be extremely frustrating for him. It limits his growth, I think, because he gets inside his head sometimes without sustaining any kind of momentum. And I don't think he doubts himself. I just don't think he is allowing himself to be the fighter he could be. The unfortunate thing about Kevin Lee and how he is and where he sits in this is that without some wins, he's kind of going to be a forgotten man. He probably makes a decent amount of money because he had that interim title fight. I think it was an interim title fight with Tony Ferguson. And so he's probably making decent money. And that's going to be something the UFC is going to look at. What the UFC also has to look at is maybe they would be doing Kevin Lee a favor by letting him go and letting him get some confidence in another division, another promotion. I think that would be the right move, was to sit Kevin Lee down and say, look, you're in a weird spot just because of your size and the weight divisions we have. We're gonna release you and let you get a fight as soon as you can in another promotion, and the door will be open to come back. But you got to get that momentum back. You need to show us something that would make us believe that you're going to have the momentum to go forward in the UFC. Kevin Lee is a talented fighter. I just don't know what he can do because of his size in the UFC. Too big for lightweight, too small for welterweight. 165-pound division's not there. The UFC would probably be helping him out if he can sign at another promotion. Keep the door open for the UFC and make some money somewhere else. Maybe he gives the PFL a shot and go after that million. Not a bad idea. Doing that would definitely boost his confidence if he wins it, and would be a good way to get back to the UFC as well. Sam Alvey lost, and he is now 0-6-1. And the UFC, Dana White said that he was going to give Alvey another shot. I don't understand why. He's a defensive fighter. He's not an exciting fighter. He doesn't change his style. He with a little adjustments, he could probably get some wins, but he's just someone, you know what you're going to get when you face Alvey. And so you just make your game plan to be a little more avoidant of the counters, and you're going to beat him. But now his record's 0-6-1, and White said he's going to get another chance. And the reason I'm going to believe Sam Alvey is going to get another chance is simply because he's a person who can fill a prelim spot. He's a recognizable name that fans can rally behind, and he's not very expensive. His last disclosed pay was $64,000. He hasn't won since then, so I'm going to assume his fight pay is still in that range. So the UFC can throw him on a fight card in a middleweight, maybe get someone else over by beating Sam Alvey, and get fans to tune in because Sam Alvey is a recognizable name. And that's just simple math on the side of the UFC, but we'll see how that all plans out. The rankings, I don't understand the rankings. After Daniel Rodriguez beat Kevin Lee, I looked at the official UFC welterweight rankings. I was shocked to see that Robbie Lawler was now the number 15 ranked fighter in the welterweight division. The cynical part of me says that, oh, they're throwing him in there because he is fighting Nick Diaz soon, and then you can throw a ranking behind one of the numbers, one of the fighters, and that seems to do something for some people. But I don't know if that's the case. But here's the thing. Lawler hasn't fought in a year. He hasn't had a win, I think, since 2017, if I'm correct. I might be wrong on that. And he's losing skid, a winless skid. Oh, yeah, here's what I have. He has one win in the past 5 years. Hasn't fought in the past year. And this is no shot at him. This is a shot at the UFC. Meanwhile, Daniel Rodriguez now has, I think, 6 wins in the past little over a year in welterweight, and he's not ranked. So the question here is, why is Lawler ranked when he definitely should not be? Who is ranking these fighters? Where are the picks for each person who is ranking the fighters? Where's the transparency? Why is this the case? Who's even in the rankings? Is Rodriguez even a rankable fighter? I don't know. I don't know anything about the rankings. All I know is Robbie Lawler is the number 15 ranked fighter. He should not be because, one, he hasn't fought in over a year. Two, he has one win in the past 5 years, and he's ranked. And if you go into the UFC rankings, you can see, I think you can still see the rankings pool, who's doing the rankings, but you can't see who they ranked and where they ranked them. There is no transparency. Do I trust the UFC official rankings? No. Would I? Because I don't have any transparency. I don't know who anyone is voting for. There's zero transparency, which makes me 100% suspicious of these rankings. Maybe that's just me. But how hard is it to publish who these people pick? Because they used to do it. The UFC used to do that. You used to be able to search on every person who voted. Is there not enough people voting? Is that the case? Again, which makes me suspicious. So the UFC rankings, official rankings, which the UFC uses, are broken. And this is another example of why the official UFC rankings are broken. There's zero transparency, and we don't know anything about it other than Robbie Lawler all of a sudden showed up at number 15, and he hasn't won but one fight in the past 5 years. Come on now. Chris Tyone gets a thumbs up from me, and I think from many pundits of MMA when he warned Wellington Turman that he was going to take a point from him. If he poked Alvey in the eye again, he took a point, and then he took another point shortly thereafter. The warnings were out there. He told Turman that, you know, if you do it again, you're going to get a point taken away, and he did it again, and he got a point taken away. So I wish this would happen more. The rules are there for a reason. The rules are the rules. I know some fighters don't like to, and the commentary team doesn't like to when the referees get involved, but everyone knows the rules. And the only reason the referees get involved is the fighters force the referees to get involved. If you're not poking the guy in the eye, if you're not kicking the guy in the balls, well, there's no reason for the referee to get involved then, is there? The rules are there for a reason. You break them, you lose a point. That's the way the game's played. So Tyone did the right thing, and good on him. During the intro, they did some. The UFC did a good video, a good short video on Giga Chikadze. It used some good shots of his, where he grew up, his youth, and the video was just very well done. It wasn't the same old, same old. It gave some good background on his country, on how he grew up, on his journey through martial arts, and it was educational in some ways, entertaining in some ways, and very well done. And I just wanted to, you know, give a shout out to the production team for that. I think they should have more of that. Barboza's was okay, but you can only work with what you're given. But I think, you know, maybe if you have someone working that who is a little more focused on the journalism side of things and knows what to ask and knows how to dig and knows how to get the right footage and questions, the UFC will have more success in that. Now, do they care enough to do that? I don't know. They cared enough to do it for Chikadze, so hopefully this is a bit of a turning point at least, because I really liked that, and I know I was not the only one who appreciated that. Well, on to the fights. Amano Martinez, he had a very rough lead-up to the UFC Vegas 35 fight card. Protocol COVID-19 protocols knocked him out of his August 21st fight. And on August 17, his coach, Saul Celez, died from COVID-19. So he had a lot on his mind heading into this fight and probably had a pretty heavy heart. He had a rough first 5 minutes. Guido Canetti kicked the hell out of his leg, but he bounced back, reset, and before the second round, he was more aggressive. He pushed forward more. His striking was much better than Canetti's. Maybe Canetti faded a little bit after putting so much effort into the kicking game in the first round, but for whatever reason, Martinez was able to finish the fight strong, get the win, and a good performance from him. I think he's someone you want to keep an eye on. He's only 25, I think, and I doubt this was his best performance we're going to see out of him, just because of all the things that went wrong before the fight took place. So Martinez, someone definitely to watch. Pat Sabatini and Jamal Emmers. Sabatini, I said this before, a Philadelphia kid, Pennsylvania. The name is just screams Pennsylvania wrestler. It's just a name that you, if you've wrestled or followed wrestling in Pennsylvania, you would think that you know who Pat Sabatini is, just because, you know, did I wrestle that kid? Did I watch that kid wrestle? It's just a Pennsylvania name. It's very, I don't know, maybe it's just me. Anyway, but I like Sabatini here. He got rocked by Emmers, recovered when Emmers followed him to the ground, locked in a heel hook while Emmers went for a toe hold. Heel hook trumps toe hold, and Emmers ended up getting his knee torn up and losing by submission. After the fight, Sabatini said he was really unhappy with how things went, and he thought he could do better. His face, if you looked at his face after the fight, yeah, his face read that, and maybe he was a little hard on himself. But in a sport like MMA, where if you get satisfied, if you just think that you're good enough, well, that's when everyone starts to pass you. That's when you stagnate or regress, Conor McGregor. When you start thinking you're good enough to beat anyone, you're not good enough to beat anyone. And so Sabatini has the right attitude for MMA, I think. So he's someone I would definitely keep an eye on. Anyone who wants to keep pushing themselves and is never satisfied, while might signify some issues with their personality, it's also something you need in MMA, I think. So Pat Sabatini, excellent performance. Jamal Emmers, hopefully he recovers. I think he, at the very least, he was fitted with an air cast on the way out, and I think he might have been taken out on the stretcher, but there was definitely at least some kind of injury there, even if it's just a minor one. But he did not look happy after the fight with how his knee was feeling. Darren Stewart and Dustin Jacoby had a short but exciting fight. Stewart started out strong, but Jacoby quickly caught up and ended the fight in the first round with a striking. One of the things I think you should go back and watch in this fight was how Jacoby got that finish. Stewart was against the cage, and he was throwing back, but the punches weren't very fast. They weren't really aimed to injure. They were just more there to get him out of trouble. And Jacoby saw them from a mile away, and his head movement was just exquisite. And he just touched Stewart up against the cage there for the finish. Jacoby is a former Glory Kickboxing title challenger. And while I don't think he is a great kickboxer, his kickboxing skills will translate well to the middleweight division right now with how the division is. So Jacoby is somebody to watch. His striking is very good, and if he gets good matchups, I think he's someone who could go pretty high in the current middleweight division. So keep an eye on Dustin Jacoby. At the very least, he'll be fun to watch for his striking techniques. Sam Alvey has been fighting for his job for the past few years, and I do know. I think he's kept that job simply because of name recognition and pay. And he'll, I guess, get another shot, but he did not look good against Terman. If you lose a fight where the referee has taken 2 points from your opponent, that says you didn't do much to win that fight. You were kind of just in there not getting knocked out. So when Alvey got mad that he lost the fight, that was silly. It was nonsensical. And the only person he should blame, instead of blaming the judges like he did, was himself. All he had to do was a little more than Terman to get a win after the referee took 2 points off. He did not do that. Alvey cost himself that fight, not the judges. He fights too defensively. He relies too much on his counter strikes. He's never, I shouldn't say never, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to get a win if he just keeps fighting this style with everyone knows what you get from him. He doesn't change even when he should. And that is a horrible thing in modern MMA. So Sam Alvey lost, and the only person Sam Alvey has to blame is himself. And really, if he would have won, would he have celebrated? Because didn't Terman lose? If Alvey would have won, wouldn't it have been a case of Terman losing much, much more than Alvey winning, since the referee took 2 points from Terman? Yeah, that would have been the case. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan was on a 3-fight losing skid before he fought Alessio De Chirico, ended that with a massive, massive head kick, and just a nasty first-round finish from Al-Hassan, who looked like he didn't even break a sweat before he got the finish. He has a lot of first-round finishes, but once outside of the first round, he struggles. So we saw what we have come to expect from Al-Hassan. Now we need to see him get a win outside of the first round. Powerful man, devastating strength in his strikes, but is his cardio there to get him past the first round and get him a win in the latter rounds. He's fighting in Colorado now, training rather. So maybe that's shored up. I think everyone should keep an eye on him. If he just keeps winning in the first round, that's still going to be great to see. And he's going to at least give you about 5 minutes of excitement before things turn for him. But he's definitely an exciting fighter to watch. Gerald Mershot, things have been always gone Mershot's way. I was one of the people that was very high on him when he got his debut with the promotion and won in 2016. But he's had his ups and downs. He was on a 3-5 run heading into Saturday night. He was the biggest underdog on the fight card. And he was basically sent out there, I think, by the looks of the matchmaking and the odds, to lose in a spectacular way to Makhmad Muradov. Instead, he won in a spectacular way against Makhmad Muradov. You do not want to go to the mat with Gerald Mershot. He is a good, good fighter on the ground, great submission skills. And what I think about this fight and how good Mershot looked, it reminds me of how Chimaev destroyed Mershot. Mershot's a good fighter. And this was a reminder that what Chimaev did to Mershot was special. I thought Mershot was going to give Chimaev a battle. He did not. And that, I think people can see, is more a reflection of Chimaev than it is of Mershot. So I just wanted to throw that in, you know, to the people who told me how silly and stupid I was to think that Mershot was going to give Chimaev a fight when they met. Daniel Rodriguez made a great short notice performance against Kevin Lee, won the fight. He's now 6-1 in the UFC. He might break into the rankings, especially since, you know, Robbie Lawler broke into the rankings. He's a good, powerful striker. He's getting better technique-wise with every fight, and this was a big win for him. He beat Kevin Lee, a recognizable name. So Rodriguez is out there doing what he needs to do, accepting short-notice fights, winning short-notice fights, beating opponents with a recognizable name. He's doing everything he can to get his name in fans' minds. And I think the days of overlooking Daniel Rodriguez, those might be behind us all. So good performance from Daniel Rodriguez. I expect to see him fight at least once more in 2021. And if he has his way, it looks like he'll fight, you know, more than once, because he's up for some fights and he's making some moves. So keep an eye on Daniel Rodriguez. Ricky Turquios and Brady Heinstand was for the bantamweight. Tough fight. It was a good fight. It was an exciting fight. I don't know if either of these guys is going to do much within the UFC right now. I was kind of surprised that they both did not get contracts, because it was a good and exciting fight. And also that Heinstand, who is only 22, he looked like he has some promise. The UFC should have probably given him another shot. That they still could, but it would have been a good look if White would have done the old "you both get contracts" move for this one. He did not. And I think he might be missing out on a 22-year-old who looked like he had at least some talent and could grow into a decent fighter. Brian Battle won the middleweight tough event, and I don't know. He had a late replacement fighter in Gilbert Urbina, but he looked okay, but he's very much a work in progress. Luckily, he's in the middleweight division, but I don't know how well he's going to perform against UFC-quality opponents. Edson Barboza lost to Giga Chikadze. He's still one of the best strikers in the UFC at 35, though, and now he's 2-2 at featherweight, and his lightweight career kind of had his ups and downs. And the reason that his careers have his ups and downs, it's because Edson Barboza has fought nothing but the best opponents since 2014. By no means is he a washed-up fighter at 35. He's a great fighter. He's just not elite anymore. And I don't know if he's going to fall into a spot of gatekeeper, because I still think he's too talented to be considered a gatekeeper. Elite gatekeeper, maybe. If you get past Edson Barboza, you're probably someone who deserves to be on their way to a title shot. And Giga Chikadze is a fighter who deserves to be on his way to a title shot. I had my doubts about this fight for Chikadze. I thought maybe it was too soon. It was only his 7th UFC fight, and definitely his biggest name, but he performed fantastic. I would take that axe kick out of his arsenal because it's not really going to work against top-level fighters in the UFC. And other than that, Chikadze is a fast, accurate, powerful striker who can turn the fight around with just one technique. Does he deserve a top-notch opponent in his next outing? He does. Does he deserve to be a backup fighter for a title shot? I don't know. I mean, I would say maybe give that to someone else that's been around longer and have some wins, but he has some wind in his sails right now, so maybe he's the guy that gets it. Does he deserve a fight with Max Holloway? Deserve probably doesn't have anything to do with this, because I sure as hell would watch a Max Holloway Giga Chikadze fight. And I don't know, without sitting down and thinking about it, who I would favor. I mean, it would be a hell of a fight, that's for sure. And it could probably, well, it definitely could main event any kind of card except for maybe a pay-per-view, but I wouldn't be upset if that was a pay-per-view headliner. So maybe that fight gets made. I hope that fight gets made. It would be exciting to see, and I think it would draw a lot of fans. I think Chikadze's getting older, but his window for moving up is still wide open. Top-notch striker, fast, powerful, can mix up his techniques, can go high, low, body, whatever it takes. He's going to be throwing a lot of kicks, and we saw him go for a submission on Saturday night. It was brief, but he was confident enough to at least attempt it, which leads me to believe that Chikadze is learning and he's not afraid to try new things outside of the gym and actually in top-notch competition fights. So 33 years old and is going to be a problem in the division. Well, he's already a problem in the division, so I don't see many people signing up and requesting a fight with Chikadze. Holloway might be the guy to do so. And we know we got the Yair Rodriguez. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Holloway and Rodriguez at this point. But if something goes awry and Holloway is available to fight, hell yeah, book him against Giga Chikadze. Everyone wins. Everyone wins in that one. And with that, I'm going to call it a day for the UFC Vegas 35 wrap-up. And I'll be back Tuesday. And until then, everyone stay safe.